Good morning. My name is Aurora, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. At this time, I would like to welcome you to the conference call on the report on economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the second quarter of 2023. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to make a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers, Rodrigo Mariscal Paredes, Head of Economic Planning Unit, Ministry of Finance, and Maria del Carmen Bonilla, Head of Public Credit and International Affairs Unit, Ministry of Finance, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to the conference call. I'm Rodrigo Mariscal. I'm the Chief Economist for the Ministry of Finance, and with me, it's Mari Carmen Bonilla, the Head of the Public Credit Unit. So I will start by making some general remarks on the economy, then I will proceed to do some remarks on the Mexican economy, and then explain a little bit of the results of the first semester of the public finances. So let me just start by saying that the economic activity in general has improved the outcome, but the uncertainty remains. So we've seen some European Union, it's close to a technical recession. Probably China has reopened, but it haven't bring that expected boost to the general economy. But however, the U.S. economy, at least in the first semester, looks better than we expected, or close to what we expected, but less that the general public expected. At least some analysts were pricing already a recession and were expecting a recession based on some indicators. But however, there is still some uncertainty related to some indicators, especially the conference board and the yield curve and other probability recession that are published out there. They are pricing or they are expecting still a recession. There are some other disagreements with the general analysts, but at least we see some differences in what the numbers are coming from and what are expected. But however, there are some improvements on the margin. The GDP has increased, but there are some sectors that are decelerating. The latest reading of the GDP show an improvement, but and with that also the employment and practically the non-farm payroll outturns have been better than expected, the consensus, for at least 12 of the last 14 months. So we don't see really a lasting effects from the financial stress that we see in the first quarter or kind of the second quarter or the debt ceiling. And we expect broadly that the U.S. growth would end of the year with our estimate that we set in the preliminary guidance that it's 1.5% of growth for this year. We might be revising it up, but it's something that we're still pondering about the numbers. But we will let you guys know with the general guidelines that we will publish on September. Now, the inflationary pressures are coming down. I think that that's a good, a positive thing for the general outlook. However, we think that the monetary policy, it has been most stretching that it has been in many years, and we probably were going to see a stop in the Fed. There's still some uncertainty coming from that, but I think that the probability that we have reached the limit, it's high, and we will probably going to start to see more increasing in the real interest rate from the Fed. Also, I think that it has been difficult to make the case that the traditional monetary policy challenges are fully explained the lower inflation after all the fading out of the supply shocks, the lower energy prices and labor market, and especially the service overperforming. And probably what we're going to see is that in the second semester of the year, the expectations and the the monetary policy will be more powerful to address the inflationary pressures. In terms of the banking and the corporate bankruptcies that we have seen so far, I think that it's something that we are looking at very closely. Practically, the U.S. corporate bankruptcies from January to June are close to the highest since 2010, the European Union as well and the U.K. So it's something that it adds some risk to the economy, especially related to the monetary policy stance. But it's something that we think it's going to be important to just keep an eye on. From the part of the U.S. that is closely linked to the Mexican economy, what I would like to say is that, first of all, we have seen that industrial production in many sectors, mostly related to the U.S. export, are performing well. For example, the transport equipment, electronics, electric equipment, and manufacturing in general. So if you see the year-to-date growth of manufacturing in the U.S., it has grown about 2%. But when we do the reweighting of those sectors and add up from bottom to up, we get something close to 3% in year to date. So meaning that although the manufacturing sector is not the most dynamic in the U.S., the weighted manufacturing sector by the Mexican export, it has increased more than the outturn. Practically, also we are looking at the U.S. manufacturing in the Midwest. I think that the Midwest is resurging, and especially with the construction growing rapidly, which seems to be a potential source of pulling from a source of more exports for Mexico. Practically, total manufacturing construction in some states of the Midwest have been increasing very steeply, although they don't represent too much for the U.S. economy as a whole. It does represent some important pulling factor for the Mexican economy, or so as we expect. Particularly in the East North Central, the construction is growing by 130%, and these are the regions that are very close connected to Mexico. Basically, all the Midwest, it's growing, and it's very much related to Mexican export, and we think that some of those states are going to be more, or Mexico is going to be winning more import share for those states. If not, that they already have some important states, particularly Illinois and Michigan are some of the states that are very closely connected, but also Texas and California, which is now it's not so well, it's kind of underperforming, but and it's not in the Midwest, but we think that this is going to be supportive of the Mexican growth for the year and next year. Now, coming to the Mexican economy, we practically are in line with what we have expected and what we put in the forecast for the preliminary guidelines in April. The GDP for the second quarter of 2023, it's a little bit above our expectations. We were expecting something close to 0.8%. It has come at 0.9% of quarter-on-quarter of growth. And practically what we see from the general economic activity is that it has not decelerated so much. There are some volatility in some sectors, and actually the industrial part is picking up a little bit while the service sector is decelerating. But in general, I would say that we have reasons to believe that we are going to be practically in line with our growth projections. From the sources of the growth, we practically think we have not revised the sources as well. We saw in April, and we still see that the domestic demand is going to be the main driver of growth. Practically, the investment performance has been quite good, and you can see that in the import of capital goods. Practically, all the trucks sales are at high levels, confirming that the sector is more dynamic. Business confidence, it's 5 percentage points above the average. Also, the business indicator that INEGI calls it the right time to invest in manufacturing, construction, and services is practically above the average. And companies have been able to increase their profits. When we look at the gross operating surpluses and the market, the listed firms in the stock market performance are doing quite good. And we can also map that results into the fiscal figures that we are looking coming from the corporate income tax. And as well, the labor market, it's also performing quite good. The consumption has been growing in a very healthy way. Practically all the leading indicators that we have in the consumption remain strong in the second quarter of 2023, meaning retail sales. We kind of also track the point of sale transaction with the credit cards and the car and SUV sales. So at least we think that the consumption has been performing quite good. We haven't seen so much deceleration or things that we should be worried, but we, in some areas and in some specific sectors, we have seen some impact related to the exchange rate appreciation and some lower or losing some momentum in some specific sector, in the service sector. But in general, we see that the consumption is performing quite good. In terms of the employment, as I was saying, practically the unemployment rate is at the lowest level. The total employment, we keep generating employment. For the former part, as of June, the economy generates close to 500,000 jobs, and this is the highest number since 2017. And something that is very important to emphasize is that the labor force participation is close to all-time highs at 60%. So meaning that practically all the labor force is not only finding the job when they seek for employment, but also they are participating more into the economy, which that, at least as we expect, it will probably would add up to the potential GDP or to trend GDP, because all the participation is finding jobs. And one particular group that we are focusing on is the women labor force participation. If you see the historical rate at participation, it used to be close to 46, and it has now increased steeply. So just by interpolating the total labor force expected to be declined, or the tipping point find around 2048, just by increasing the female labor force participation that we have seen on an average of 0.7% per year, that would at least give us a more labor force participation or extending of the turning point by 12 years. And something would add up to the GDP of something about 0.1 percentage points. And that is not factoring all the effects and the estimation that we and many people have put in place because of the nearshoring. But it's just a matter of the all the productivity and the thing that we've seen. For the public investment, I would say that we will keep adding public investment. This year and last year was the first year since 2009 that the public investment had an increase in real terms. So meaning we are trying to revert the long trend of a disinvestment from the public finances. And there are some key infrastructure projects that you probably have heard. For example, the Maya train that will add close to 2,000 miles of kilometer, 2,000 kilometers of tracks, that represents 32% more of what was added in the last 100 years. And it's going to improve the general connection of the peninsula and the Istmo corridor. You probably have heard that we have close to 61 infrastructure projects that would amount something close to 2% of GDP, and will add up to 480 new jobs. This is something have to do with the Sonora plan and the maintenance of some tracks and roads, trying to improve the connection of the whole country. The Sonora plan will also it's something that we have clear to be adding to the infrastructure projects. Practically, the Puerto Peñasco photovoltaic plant will add 5 gigawatts of capacity. And currently, the first phase it's adding something close to 120 megawatts. Now, let me just start with the public finances part, and then we will proceed to Mari Carmen's remarks. Practically, you have seen the figures, I suppose. So just let me give you some brief about what we have seen in the first quarter, in the first semester of the year. Practically, the decline that happened in the oil prices and the appreciation has taken us away from the metrics of the income part. Historically, we've seen something that was not seen before, that it's an oil price drop in tandem with an exchange rate appreciation. In other episodes, in 2009 and 2020, what we saw is a drop of something close to 30% in the oil prices, but that drop was at least washed or compensated by the exchange rate appreciation of the sort of 18%. But now what we have seen is a decrease in the oil prices of about the same 30% with an exchange rate appreciation of close to 12%. So that will create some shortfall in terms of what we expect for the oil revenues. We foresee that so far, as of the first semester, we have a shortfall of 189 billion pesos below the program. And out of that, close to 220 come from oil revenues. The rest is from tax revenues that are below the program. Now, the tax revenues have also been affected by the exchange rate appreciation. Practically, how it works is that what we tax, it's the invoices that are valued in pesos, and when you have an exchange rate appreciation, that same amount of value decreases. So actually, you are taxing less. And we estimate that, we know that for the first semester, we have a shortfall of 100 billion pesos of VAT relative to the program. And out of that 100, practically half of it comes from the appreciation effect. Now, the personal income tax, it's doing very well, actually. We are 51 billion pesos above the program, and that represents a growth of close to 3% in annual terms. Also, the federal fuel excise tax has been positive, and this is something that we have already expected because of the changes in the benchmark. We also have some risk over there because, I don't know if you know, but recently we have seen the crack spread to increase a little bit, and that creates some pressure for us to increase the amount of subsidy that we provide to the pump. But it's something that we don't think it's going to be quite high or something that we should be worried about. For the state-owned companies and the non-tax revenues, we also have positive numbers that are coming above the program that would it's close to 100 billion pesos. So overall, some of the shortfalls are partially compensated by the surpluses. Now, by the end of the year, we think that we are going to be short in revenues for about 186 billion below the programs, and practically out of that, 250 are going to be coming from oil revenue side. This is from the public sector as a whole. The tax revenues will going to be probably below by 105 billion pesos, but that, again, will be compensated partially with the state-owned companies and the non-tax revenues that are going to be above the program. Now, let me go through to the expenditure. For the expenditure, at least from the first half of the year, the expenditure are, I would say, a little bit below the program, which this is something something good because if there are more pressures that will be building up to the fiscal part, we will at least want to have less pressure coming from the expenditure, and we can delay or just pass over to the next fiscal year. But something important is that although we are below the program, we are in terms of the expenditure growing relative to the previous year, which means that this is money that is pouring into the economy, and some of this money is going to transfer for the household and improving their well-being. There are some base effects relative to the programmable expenditure, but I will not spend too much time on those. But let me just say that some of the key programs, meaning the scholarships, the guarantee prices, and something important that is the fertilizer program, which is something that we would be foreseeing in the PASIC last year, and we were pushing hard to get more fertilizers to the country because of the conflict in Europe. It's performing quite good and it's above the program. The physical investment, we have reached something close to 1.5% of GDP, and we expect that this would continue up to something close to 3.7% of GDP by the end of the year. But again, this is provided that all the fiscal figures would close as we expected relative to the fiscal metrics. Let me just close by saying that the fiscal balances are in line with what we expect to be closing for the end of the year. We will probably have some small pressures relative to the shortfall or of revenue, but this is something that we can practically address with expenditure or with the cash that we have on the treasury. This would it's allowed by the metrics, and we are going to be complying with the fiscal rules. But basically, just to give you the highlights on the changes relative to what we have in the general guidelines, it's a lower primary deficit and a higher public sector borrowing required deficit. We practically are going to go from 4.1 to 4.7. But fortunately, the exchange rate appreciation would give us a little bit less of debt to GDP that we were expecting something close to 49.4%, and now we are expecting something close to 49.1%. So with the general target for that number, it's something close that the president would ask us to keep the debt to GDP something close or below to 50% of GDP. So let me just stop here and give the mic to Mari Carmen that she's going to be making some remarks to regard to the public debt. Thank you.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Good morning, everyone. I will share the main results of debt management during the second quarter of 2023. First, I would like to reassure that the main objective of the federal government is to maintain public debt in a sustainable downward path as percentage of GDP, having a responsible and transparent and efficient management. We are continuously engaging in strategies to improve our maturity profile, reduce the refinancing risk, and seek cost-efficient transactions. In this regard, I will summarize the main actions contained in the report. Regarding domestic debt, during the second quarter of 2023, the Ministry of Finance actively sought opportunities to improve debt portfolio. We continued with an intensive refinancing effort, executing around 9 operations. During April, all in, I just will make an update of the last quarter. On April 20, we carried out a syndicated auction of a new 20-year benchmark for real fixed interest rate instruments with a total amount of 13 billion pesos and a coupon rate of 3.25. On April 21st, in a follow-up transaction, we executed a liability management where the bonos with maturities between 2023 and 2040 were exchanged for the new benchmark for a total size of 22 billion pesos. On April 26th, a bond issuance was carried out. As you know, we have been pretty consistent on our sustainable bond strategies, and it consisted of 2 billion pesos with a 2-year term and a spread of 9.4 billion pesos with a 3-year term and a spread of 0.18 basis points, and 3.6 billion pesos with a 5-year term and a spread of 0.23 basis points. On June 1st, the Ministry performed a debt exchange transaction for floating rate securities. This transaction consisted on a buyback of Bondes EFE, maturing between 2023 and 2024. This worth around 18.1 billion pesos. And then we simultaneously sold Bondes EFE maturing between 2025 and 2026. The total demand was reached just refinancing something close to 20 billion in debt on domestic currency. On June 8, the syndicated auction of a new MBONO benchmark was carried out as well, with a new three-year tenor and a total amount of 15 billion pesos. This matures on September 2026. On June 9, a refinancing transaction was also executed on the domestic market, and it involved the buyback of MBONOs, UDIBONOs, maturing during 2023 and 2026. This operation was carried out to smoothen out all the amortizations we had and comply as well with the president's mandate of reducing the profile up to 2025. And this was around account for 3.4 billion pesos. And then we extend the duration between 2026 and 2043. On June 28, we did another exchange. This was for a total amount of 36 billion pesos, and this reduced pressure as well, around 36 billion pesos in securities maturing between 2023 and 2024. These were floaters, bondes F. Recently, this is not reported in this quarter, but I just wanted to highlight because this was a really big transaction, the one we carried out on July 7 for 132 billion pesos. This was for the same purposes, to reduce pressures between 2023 and 2025 and increase duration all across the curve. This was a mix of break-even between UDIBONOs and MBONOs and some extension on fixed-rate instruments. And syndicated auctions as well have helped us to provide new benchmarks. During July 20, this is not part of this report, but for transparency, I will highlight as well. We issued our first fixed bond in the local market, ESG bond, on the local market for around 23 billion pesos. It will consist on a reopening going forward, and on the next quarters, we will clear out how this new issuance is performing in the market. All these operations are in complete compliance with the ceilings approved by the Mexican Congress for the fiscal year 2023. Now, on foreign debt, as you know, we have used this tool as a complementary and strategic way. And on April 20, as part of the sustainable financing strategy, the Minister of Finance placed a new SDG bond maturing in 2053. For a total of $2.9 billion. And this is the biggest sustainable bond placement in the Mexican history. It was issued in a 30-year tenor, and it has a liability management component that helps us as well to increase the sizing of this new curve in the U.S. As you know, this complies with the sustainable bond guidelines for ICMA and is based on our SDG sovereign bond framework of Mexico. For all the issuances, we are using the same framework, and in the coming months, we are going to provide the allocation and impact report and also the report from the National Mexican Audit. With this transaction, the federal government reasserts its commitment to implement cutting-edge strategies to reduce social economic gaps while promoting sustainable growth. Investor base has been diversifying, especially on the SDG bonds, and we have new pools of liquidity, so we are going to keep along with this strategy going forward. Now I will mention some debt levels. The PSBR for the public sector stood at 45.8 of the GDP, The domestic debt represented 33.9% of GDP and external debt 11.9%. With respect to public sector's net debt, including the state of companies and development banks, this figure was 46.2% and ended the second quarter with the domestic debt around 34.2% and external debt 12% of GDP. Net debt was 38.8% of GDP, and the domestic component on this one it accounted for 32.3% of GDP and external component for 6.5% of GDP. And regarding risk metrics, I would say that the debt portfolio preserves healthy risk indicators. Currency risk remains low, with only 16.7% of the federal government's net being denominated in foreign currency and 83.3% in domestic currency. Additionally, refinancing risk stands at low levels, since the average maturity of foreign market debt is 20.3 years, and the average maturity of domestic market debt is 7.8 years, which shows an upward path since it stood at 7.3 years in 2021. And this is a reflection of all the liability management transactions in the local markets. Lastly, interest rate risk is also limited, given that 76.3% of domestic market debt is a long-term and fixed nominal real rate, while 100% of the external market debt is at fixed rate. Thank you for your attention. We will now proceed to the Q&A.